between them to come
Love
back.
Talk Radio.
Enjoy her entire labor. You can imagine the burden lifted from the pool of women.
There's a little song that we sing in our movement down in the South. I don't know if you've heard it. It has become the theme song. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory is won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory is won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory is won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators, but we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the brilliancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the
power.
if they think that you get the word out and put it over the phone, well, never answer the Lord. So we stand in the hill on 2022, saying, read. So it ain't about the
God, in accordance with a proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves of this involves an absolute equality of rights and rights of property.
Shepherd, I shall not want. He making me to lay down in green pastures. He leading me beside the still waters. He restored my soul. He leading me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup running over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen.
I thank you for that. We're talking about June 10th tonight. We're talking about what happened. And we're going to talk about June 10th and what's happening. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. This is the Seed Abraham Bible class night. And I think people need to know what happened. Some don't know what happened in Houston, Texas. Some don't know what happened in June 10th. And I think they need to know what happened in June 10th. Once they know how to deal with some of the stuff that happened. And some don't know. And some need to know. And once you know, it changed your direction and changed your where you go and what happened with us as we come out of June 10th. And some people don't even know what happened to us in June 10th. So we lost for information. We lost for the knowledge that God want to give us and the truth our ancestors want us to know. I think it's important for people to understand where we at, where we supposed to be going, and every door that closed, every story that's been told is telling a story about something that happened with black folks. Important to understand what happened in Texas happen all over the United States. We just bringing some of it out.
This episode of Untold Stories is underwritten by Barry just, Collier Jr.
Some of it ain't told. It's never been told. What happened in June 10th? What happened to Tulsa, Oklahoma? And some people looking and saying, well, Bishop, what happened? What really, ain't nobody really told me. Some people just learning about what happened with the organization, and some people still don't know. I had several people call me, tell me about Juneteenth. Tell me about what's that all about. Because it was kept from us. And what happened in
this segment of WGC.
And then what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma was kept from us also. So we have a lot of rich history to deal with, because we got to deal with some of the things that happened. Some people don't know about it yet, and they're still looking for how to deal with slavery and I deal with what's going on and what happened, what Juneteenth means when they got the news in Galveston, Texas, and how it affected
this episode of Untold Stories,
and how it affected so many people. It was told, some of it was told, and some of it wasn't told. Okay? So if they ain't telling it, you got to know, somebody got to tell your children, and children got to be told what happened in Juneteenth.
General Order Number 3, the Juneteenth Order.
This is Juneteenth.
The people of Texas are informed that, in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves. And the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between an employer and hired labor.
You can imagine the burden lifted from these people, the men, the women, the children that knew that they were chattel property and now understand that they were free. But the question that was lingering was, what did freedom look like?
The slaves built this country.
They had a sense of who they were. They very quickly built a sense of community.
To what degree have we actually achieved the absolute freedom that Juneteenth promised?
Ignoring these painful histories doesn't mean that they don't still influence us.
We stand on the shoulders of those that came before, and we need to honor their memory by telling their story.
Juneteenth, 1865 to 2021.
Galveston, Texas, a place known for tourism and quick getaways. But it's the history which happened here that impacts us all today.
African slaves were brought here on ships in the 1800s. But even after the slave trade ended, slavery here did not.
It was in 1865, June 19th, now known as Juneteenth, when Union soldiers arrived and told slaves they were free.
It came 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln announced slavery had ended in the United States.
And we should remember this important date. June 19, 1865, represents the evolution of our country to a more perfect future. We were not perfect in 1528, 1619, 1776, 1865, or even the day in 2021, but we're moving, hopefully, to a more perfect day.
Juneteenth is directly related to the history of the Civil War and the emancipation of enslaved people in the Confederacy. Juneteenth is important for Texas because that is when enslaved Texans learned they were free and that the Confederacy had fallen.
So we're standing in the 2200 block of the Strand Historic District in Galveston. This was the heart of the commercial district in Atlanta.
It was the largest city.
The largest enslaver also lived here in Galveston. They owned 7 plantations, 4 in Brazoria County, 2 in Matagorda County, and 1 in Fort Bend.
Texas was a safe haven for slavery called the running of the slaves. That was basically moving their slaves to Texas because there was no Union presence in Texas.
When Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, he knew that that would not immediately end slavery. And it didn't. And the reason is fairly simple. The Confederate States of America had formed its own country. They elected their own president. Confederate states printed their own money. which is why the Confederacy and the United States went to war. The United States' goal at the beginning of the war was just to restore the Union. The first war goal was not to emancipate the enslaved population.
And there are all these myths and stories about what happened and why it took 2.5 years for the war to reach Texas. Plantation owners in Texas were well aware of the Emancipation Proclamation, but they ignored it. What they cared about was maintaining the agrarian economy in Texas, and that was solidly based on cotton. And to maintain that, they needed slave labor. General Gordon Granger was on his way to Texas. Most of the Texas authorities had a pretty good idea what he was coming to Texas to do. Granger was in Texas for about a month. He sent his troops.
There were white soldiers and black soldiers.
Plantation to plantation, making the announcement.
Those black soldiers are people who especially helped shift the Union war goals from a war to restore the Union into a war of emancipation. It was personal for them.
They went over to the old custom house on 20th Street to the courthouse square, from the courthouse square to the Cutler Church on Broadway, which was really tough.
Some of the dock workers were among the first to get the word, and so the celebrations began.
Give us a sense of what it must have been like for slaves on Juneteenth when they heard that message.
You know, that was something that was almost like going to heaven. The celebration, just to be so excited to taste that freedom.
The initial celebrations, there would be prayer services, looking back at our journey to this country, what we had to endure in bondage. And the people, the people who never lived to see that day, I think it's inescapable not to remember those people. Transatlantic voyage, the Middle Passage, people jumping off ships to avoid the treatment that they would have to endure.
The way the old boss didn't tell you no, it was sweet.
He didn't tell you that?
He didn't tell you. I think now they said it went to 6 months out of there. 6 months. And turned them loose on the 19th of June. That's why you know we celebrate that day. Celebrate that day.
One of the quotes that I'm most fond of is from a former slave named Felix Haywood. Slavery could make you free, but it couldn't make you rich, because a lot of slaves thought that now that they were free, they would be rich, just like the white man.
You think about the elation, the trepidation of enslaved people, not knowing what the future holds, and being enslaved and bondage, being lifted from their back.
And there was one narrative about one slave who got the word, and his sister said, brother gave a whoop and ran away, and I never saw him again.
Was the South ready to free slaves? No, we know that.
Even though the order indicated the enslaved were free, if you look at the last sentence, it gives some instructions of what they can or cannot do.
The freedmen are advised to remain quietly at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect a military post and that they will not be supported in idleness either there or elsewhere.
When you're told you're free, you're thinking that, oh, I can live my life. But it wasn't like that.
On one hand, you were free by name, but the actual reality of freedom, you were not fully experiencing it.
There were a lot of very frightened former slaves, and a lot of them stayed on the plantation.
They laid the bricks in the downtown area here where we stand on many of these buildings. Not only laid the bricks, but made the bricks.
Just off Galveston's bustling Broadway Street is Ashton Villa, built in 1859 by James Moreau Brown, a loyalist to the Confederacy, dubbed an honorary colonel. Brown was also a wealthy banker, architect, and mason. who designed what's believed to be the first all-brick house. A palace with bricks, all laid by slaves.
Anywhere you read, they will tell you that, you know, slaves did all the work for this. They had to follow what the contractor was either telling them or showing them in order to do it. And look at this place. It's beautiful.
All of the intricacies and the detail that still stand today. It's amazing.
1859, one of the few buildings that withstood the 1900 storm.
Ashton Villa was saved from demolition in 1970. Historic home, now an event space, is operated by the Galveston Historical Foundation and home to the island's annual Juneteenth celebration.
So much happened.
They could leave the farm, they could leave the plantation, and they did, because so many emancipated people no longer wanted to work in agriculture because it reminded them of enslavement. For many people, the draw was labor, the opportunity to earn wages,
working to pay off debt. The debt was never paid off. There were a lot of things that still kept the same people
suppressed.
That's why a group of them ended up in your hometown in Houston. So they marched to Houston.
The black population of Houston boomed. They began to build homes in the part of Houston known as Fourth Ward. Houston was divided into six different wards at the time. And so the land in that area of Fourth Ward happened to be very low and flood prone. It wasn't land that was coveted by white Houstonians at the time.
When you look at the bricks of Freedmanstown, that brick is a symbol of foundation. That brick was a symbol of hope. The brick was theirs. They made the brick, they formed the brick, shaped the brick, they laid the brick, they stood on the brick.
Iconic housing of Freedmanstown was the shotgun house. There was a door in the front and then a door in the back. And people would joke that if you shot a gun, bullets would travel all the way through without hitting it.
The legendary Jack Yates is the land where he lived, and right next door to him was his son, the printer Rutherford D.H. Yates. The first time I walked along these bricks, I was very emotional. This is where my people decided that they would survive. These are 8-pound bricks that were double-baked. And the significance of these bricks is that it has that beautiful red color of the clay that was here. And the fact that they are still here today is a testament to their strength, a testament to their craftsmanship and their skill.
Oh, these are original. I reside here in Freedmanstown. I was born in Freedmanstown, probably conceived in Freedmanstown. And this is a home that passed down through our family. I'm like the fifth generation. And the family operated a ice business and just drove through the community selling blocks of ice. They did the best to gain the property and to support their community.
The wards in Houston functioned a little bit like small towns. Third Ward developed a black community. Fifth Ward developed one early. The black community of Third Ward began to develop around what we today call Emancipation Avenue, but that back then was Dowling Street, which was actually the name of a Confederate. Dowling is really the center of old black Third Ward. And one of the reasons for that is the creation or the purchase of Emancipation Park. And it's the first public space owned by black people in the state of Texas.
With newfound freedom came new challenges, including the fight to be seen
as equals.
Freed men and women did more than survive. They built a legacy.
And it is right here, Emancipation Park.
In Houston's historic Third Ward.
Emancipation Park was always a place to celebrate.
Two black church congregations fundraised to buy the park. For them, the memory of Juneteenth would have been very fresh. They were someone else's property less than a decade earlier.
I'm the great-great-granddaughter of Jack Hayes. He was instrumental in purchasing Emancipation Park, where the free slaves celebrated Juneteenth.
One of the most famous families in Reconstruction era Houston were the Hayes family.
He was free. However, his wife and children weren't. So he came to Texas and entered back into slavery so that he could be with his family.
They were brought here to continue to be slaves.
Once freedom came again, he knew what that tasted like. He knew what that felt like. So he took his family and moved to Houston to start a brand new life.
Jack Yates actually began helping and teaching and helping them to learn, because at that time, you know, slaves weren't supposed to read or write.
He was a wage laborer as his day job, and at night preached near the Buffalo Bayou in Houston. And then gradually they were able to build their own church.
I'm a member of Antioch Missionary Baptist Church and have been all of my life. That was the first church that he started, but there were many other churches that he started, including Bethel in Houston.
It is that spirit, it is that zeal, it is that determination that he and others poured into the foundation when they built this church. So when you talk about World War I, where soldiers went off to fight, when they came home, Antioch was able to train and cross-train ex-veterans in masonry work, in carpentry work, and really help these ex-soldiers to find jobs and to provide homes for their families, education for their children. It was these very women from this very church who taught other women how to vote.
So many great people have been here and have been inspiring and galvanizing the community.
When I was growing up in Houston, I knew the name Yates because it was the name of a high school, Jack Yates High School in Third Ward. The first black school in Houston for a while had just been called Houston Colored High School. As the black community spreads and grows in other parts of the city, you need more schools. So when a second high school is established in Houston in Third Ward, it's named after Jack Yates.
So much happened. Football players, basketball players, preachers. George Floyd.
A massive mural in Galveston's tourist heavy Strand District depicts the long journey to absolute equality.
Expand the narrative of Juneteenth to tell a more full story of our shared American history. The things that have been invisible are becoming visible. And the stories that have been hidden are being discovered.
Galveston Historical Foundation member and Hitchcock-born businessman Sam Collins made it his business to have Galveston's history on display. I met with him at the mural, an art installation that Sam wanted to use to paint a better picture of Juneteenth, giving it depth, dating it back to centuries before the emancipation of slaves. Artist and activist Reginald Adams brought the vision to life with detailed vignettes featuring historic figures.
And then he moves through the Middle Passage, the enslaved Africans being sold by other Africans. Harriet Tubman is an iconic female image on the mural. Then you have Abraham Lincoln, the Emancipation Proclamation.
The soldiers have a very prominent place within this mural. There are more soldiers than anyone else here on the mural, it seems like.
The United States Colored Troops represent 75% of the Union forces that came into Texas. Nowhere in the history books, when I was in elementary, junior high, high school, or even college, did anybody teach me that colored troops helped bring the message of freedom here?
Just beyond the mural and at the end of the same lot, side of the old Osterman building and where General Granger signed the orders and dispersed the troops to post them, is the Juneteenth historical marker for the Texas Historical Commission.
And I thought, how can that be? One of the most historic events in American history didn't have a subject marker.
Sam Collins spent 2 years fundraising and organizing efforts to secure one.
One of the things that I've worked to do is not to take away from what has already been sold, but to add to it. This corner has now been transformed into an outdoor classroom. We're going to use technology to teach this history through augmented reality. Point their smartphone at the mural using the Uncover Everything app, and videos will pop up to expand the story so that they can learn more.
My girls, Harriet and Sean, all the things that Black people have been gone through, and to be able to get the shackles off.
It all came together to create this beautiful mosaic of historians, artists, technology, visitors, tourists, people. All of that creates a beautiful picture of the expansion of knowledge, information, the history, and a lot of times they don't talk about that in the history class. So we got to get them in the picture. Not just him by us, but there we go.
His spirit and actions are one and the same, starting with the marker and now this mural.
Hopefully, individuals will wake up a desire for self-discovery and discovery of history that maybe was not taught in the classroom, so now they come to the outdoor classroom.
The history of Juneteenth is a walk for the history of Black folks and able to speak on what's been going on.
Some of the early Juneteenth celebrations were marked by pageantry, flowers, and people riding in these very elaborate coach setups.
Regional and local Black newspapers celebrating the day. You'll see announcements about picnics that are related to the holiday.
A lot of people for those celebrations dressed up in their Sunday best. They would just be joyful. There would be parties, church services. And a lot of the communities, whites didn't want to recognize those celebrations. If some of those former slaves had jobs, they couldn't get the day off to celebrate. A lot of the city officials said, well, you can't have your celebration in the city. And so that would push those celebrations out away from the city in rural settings, in pastures, meadows, groves, wherever. They went with the flow.
I guess my earliest memories of celebrating Juneteenth would be when I was a child. Juneteenth was always a big celebration in our community. Eventually, you'll see the establishment of parades. We know in Houston, you have a couple of parades. It's that Juneteenth Queen and King family get together, community get together. You would have barbecue, watermelon,
ribs, and hot sausage,
red soda pop. Those were the staples. You had to have all of that on Juneteenth. You must have that barbecue.
In recent years, Juneteenth celebrations continue to include parades and music, but most importantly, a focus on the food. And one restaurant that continues to provide Juneteenth meals, even amidst the pandemic, is Lucy.
Feeding all the people they can, this fine dining Houston establishment, home to a culinary artist carrying on the family's legacy of African American
cuisine
and gastronomy. This museum district restaurant is Lucille. It is where the past meets the present on a plate. The restaurant itself is named after owner and executive chef Chris Williams' great-grandmother, Lucille B. Smith.
Often noted as Texas' first African-American businesswoman, she created the first instant hot roll mix in the history of this country, which is a recipe that Pillsbury borrowed to create their empire. This is verified by the Chicago Tribune in 2014. She was the first national African-American food editor for Tapia Magazine, which is now Ebony
scene. Her client list includes everybody from LBJ to the Roosevelts, Martin Luther King, to Muhammad Ali, to Joe Lewis, and all points in between.
Chef Williams continues the family legacy, having hosted President Biden. But it is not just the powerful for whom he hosts or prepares food for.
So we provide service to all the historically black neighborhoods, from Sunnyside to Third Ward to Fifth Ward to Acres Home.
Having founded the nonprofit Lucille 1913, the year his great-grandmother birthed her catering business, and also the same year marking the 50th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation.
At our peak, we were doing 1,800 meals a day.
So I had a pork shoulder that I braised for about 4 hours,
allowed them to play with a ton of different ingredients.
This Juneteenth will prepare more meals.
The barbecue chicken, the beans.
On top of the already 250,000 meals served.
And that's what we're working on right now for the menu for today. Getting ready to feed the people of Houston.
Delivering dignity.
The restaurant does pay homage to her culinary freedom and creativity as a chef.
With fresh, elevated food.
Exactly what we do over today at Lucille. Southern cuisine with global influences.
The word reconstruction sounds good, and it started out well-intentioned, but it didn't stay, quote-unquote, reconstruction, did it?
No. When we think about the period of reconstruction, particularly here in Texas, we all have to think about the turmoil around politics.
The Democratic Party was conservative. The Republican Party was liberal. 1870, 15th Amendment is what makes black men's right to vote constitutional. And this changes the political landscape of parts of the South that had large black populations. Black men start voting other black men into office. Some places had black sheriffs. So this immediately changes the politics of the South. So the Ku Klux Klan arises as the violent wing of the Democratic Party.
We were familiar with the KKK, but there were a number of white vigilante groups that existed during the time. They terrorized African Americans.
By the early 1900s, the black community had already established itself with neighborhoods, businesses, and schools. But blacks still weren't considered as equal. With segregation and Jim Crow laws, they were still being treated like second-class citizens.
Segregation laws restricted every public space where Southerners could possibly make contact. When we say Jim Crow law, we are referring to legal segregation. Boston creates segregation laws in order to separate black and white passengers on city streetcars in the 1840s. People in Boston started to refer to the black section of streetcars as the Jim Crow section. They did that because Jim Crow referred to a popular minstrel figure. Early on, it was white performers, typically white men, who would blacken their faces using burnt cork. But Jim Crow was the most popular black-faced minstrel character. So popular that many white people in the United States began to identify the name Jim Crow with black people.
Here in Houston, we really can't think about Jim Crow laws without thinking about the 24th Infantry, African-American soldiers who found themselves here at Camp Logan and found themselves the victims of police brutality and Jim Crow laws and segregation.
Right, you're absolutely right. In the summer of 1917, the United States World War One. The U.S. military was still segregated. The military was constructing a training facility called Camp Logan.
So when these 700 white soldiers show up in Houston, Jim Crow is alive and well, and you got to remember, it's a new crowd. And these soldiers have fought in the Spanish-American War, in San Juan Hill, they fought in the Philippines. They weren't used to being treated as second-class citizens.
It all came to a head that August when Houston police officers were accused of attacking and killing one of the soldiers. Black soldiers of Camp Logan then marched from what's now Memorial Park to the city of Houston. This push against Jim Crow authority, mutiny and rioting, people were killed, mostly civilians. Four black soldiers died. The deadly encounter led to the soldiers' court-martial, the largest murder trial in U.S. history.
I saw the photograph of the trial that blew my mind. Here are these 63 black soldiers surrounded by white soldiers with fixed bayonets on their rifles. And Captain said the largest murder trial in American history. And I had never heard anything about it. Nothing.
In the end, 19 soldiers were hanged, and all but 8 of 118 soldiers charged were convicted for their part in the Houston riots of 1917. The police force of Southern City would send certain police officers to patrol black communities. Slave patrols in many parts of the South literally become police forces whose job it is to then police newly formed black communities. Plantations ultimately turned to prisons, with the slave labor giving way to prison labor all across Texas, including Sugar Land.
This building is actually 80 years old. It was originally a prison and part of the Texas prison system.
It was an extension of the Central State Prison Farm. The big brick building known as 2 Camp opened in 1939.
It was a prison population of color, primarily African American, some Hispanic.
The inmates worked in the fields of the state-run farm. An inmate recalled that upon arriving at 2 Camp in 1960, he was immediately ushered out into the fields to pick cotton. At the end of a grueling day, workers would return to the dormitory, where life was often just as hard.
They lived in very close quarters, actually in very hot conditions and very cold conditions.
Occupants are mostly children now, but for 30 years, this structure housed inmates.
Did you know the Freedom Tree in Missouri City is where slaves at the Palmer Plantation were notified they were free? They were told they could continue working the land, but their only form of payment would be a share of their crop. The Freedom Tree is located along Misty Hollow Drive, that's between Glen Lake and Lake Olympia Boulevard. Walter Moses Burton was a farmer, sheriff, and politician who served 4 terms in the Texas State Senate. Burton was born into slavery in North Carolina and brought to Texas when he was 21. After emancipation, he bought land in Fort Bend County and was eventually elected the first black sheriff in the country.
Are you registered to vote?
No, I'm not. I have tried twice, and I was turned down both times. Lost my job. We had Jim Crow laws. You had poll taxes. And slowly you see things that are going backwards.
So the first way you see a push against black political organizing is through the Klan. Thousands of people with gun crimes show up to watch a crowd of people lynch, burn, and mutilate, in some cases, black bodies. The people who were lynched were usually people who stood up for themselves economically or politically. Self-styled, so-called militias were using violence to subdue black voters. By the 1890s, enough violent intimidation had happened that you have white Democrats returning to power in states across the former Confederacy. The fact that we're still struggling with attempts to disfranchise voters shows exactly why we have to look at segregation as this multi-pronged attack on equality.
Dr. Martin Luther King's second day of civil rights testing in Selma, Alabama, started off smoothly enough.
But when the would-be registrants and those who accompanied them arrived at the Dallas County Courthouse, it was a different story.
Segregation was labeled separate but equal, but was far from it. Religious leaders like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Fred Shuttleworth, and Houston's Reverend Bill Lawson began to help in protest against it. The movement spread across the South. And students at Texas Southern University especially began to boycott and then gain allies in some cases from white students from nearby colleges.
13 of them, to be precise, on March 4th, 1960, they marched. But they went to the lunch counters at the Wine Garden on Alameda, and they sat, and they sat. And so they initiated the civil rights movement in Houston, Texas.
The support and mentorship of Reverend Lawson and other folks was especially significant because in some cases, the older generation sometimes agreed more with the strategies of the NAACP, who were using the courts and using the law. Because it's important to remember that technically sit-ins are illegal.
They know that what they are doing could potentially put them in danger. They're thinking about the injustices that their parents have faced, that their relatives face. They're thinking about the injustice that they themselves are facing in a world that is supposed to be separate and equal, but is everything but equal. For historically black colleges and universities, their history is related to the fact that our nation was not ready for people of African descent to study with white Americans.
Tribute A&M is a direct result of Juneteenth. Those individuals who heard that message that day, they went forth with the zeal and the fervor to realize what an education could do for emancipated black. Most importantly, now you have individuals who could not read, who could not write, that came and got to reveal a lesson here and could go back out into their community to be productive.
I chose CSU because there was a sense of belonging that I felt when I walked on the campus. It felt like family. It felt like home. And it gave me a feeling of purpose and that I was destined to be here for a specific reason.
And we know that Prairie View produces productive people. And that's one of the mottos here. And it very much ties back to that same group, that first generation who came here, studied, thrived, and fought to make their communities better.
To me, the building, Tanner Hall, was colossal. Little did I know that one day I would have the opportunity to teach at this school. This institution has been a beacon of light to people in the community.
When it came to primary education, the Gregory Institute became the high school for Houston's black children in the 1870s. At one point, it was the only high school for black students. In 1871, Harris County had the largest number of black students in school in Texas, with 734 males and 760 females. The Gregory School is now home to the African American Library. After years of fighting and debate, Betsy Ross Elementary became the first public school in Houston to integrate. The year, 1960. But even as the Houston School District began to eliminate segregation, there was pushback from white parents, as shown here in a 1970 New York Times article.
You know, it's really amazing how this area, this park, has blossomed and transformed in this community.
It is incredible when you think about the history of Emancipation Park. You know, there was a time when this was the only park that blacks in Houston.
This is the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. movement and the seed of Abraham. We're talking about Juneteenth and how the struggle that blacks should be able to love each other because of so much that happened. We're standing on the back of our ancestors right now as I speak. And by standing on the back of our ancestors, so much is going on. So when, when you stand on the back of your ancestors, you see a whole lot that you talk about, and people don't even understand that. Picking cotton, shelling corn, down in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, even Texas, Atlanta, we have come a long way. And tonight, as I speak, as we're talking about history, and this is Bible teaching us how we came out.
I wrote my own narrative, you don't know what to do with me. I was once broken, now I'm a working collage. I'm the thief on the cross, I'm still hanging with God. My savior walked on water, my ancestors can fly. My skin, it doesn't crack, my heart travels through time. Jesus slept in the grave, but he rose feeling fine. Cause
their eyes were
all over America, we have come together, water, wind. We have died.
The diaspora speaks from my skin. The reverberating of salty tides, rusted chain boat rides and arriving to the shore.
We have come a long way, and we still are rising.
General Order Number 3, the Juneteenth Order.
The people of Texas are informed that, in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves. And the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between an employer and hired labor.
You can imagine the burden lifted from these people, the men, the women, the children that knew that they were chattel property and now understanding that they were free. But the question that was lingering was, what did freedom look like?
The slaves built this country.
They had a sense of who they were. They very quickly built a sense of community.
To what degree have we actually achieved?
So one of the things I like to say, with all our
major funding provided by our
singers
and the Image Trust Fund,
those that talk and talking about Sam Cooke, you're talking about.
Ladies and gentlemen, including the people like myself, we want to thank you for coming to the Dreamland Ballroom. We want you to come back tonight, tomorrow night, and from now on.
The Little Rock Arkansas.
Here at the Dreamland Ballroom in the lowlands. Thank you.
People would come from miles around to come to Ninth Street just to see what it was like.
I'm saying this was the mecca of entertainment in the South. We thought we was on top of the world. It was home. It was everything you would wish for. I mean, all the top bands came through here.
They would come here. This was the place to come. It was nice.
I want you to rock, baby.
This is something that belongs to us. This is our place.
It was a wide open community. Some said too wide open.
I want you to rock, baby.
They did what they wanted to do to destroy a black community.
Ninth Street became nothing. No buildings on it. All the businesses were gone.
I can't see that there isn't some intent when it happened everywhere.
Oh,
yeah! That's the history.
When I first bought this building, I just fell in love with the building. I just fell in love with the architecture. It looked like a grand old building.
There's a little song that we sing in our movement down in the South. I don't know if you've heard it, but it has become the theme song.
we shall overcome. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory is won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory is won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory is won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators. But we shall overcome. And I tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of